Don't at me. But The Wiz is the greatest movie musical of all time.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to at you and say, have you not seen The Wizard of Oz?
And here comes the theme song.
Okay.
Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to my podcast. I've been lucky to talk to Lena Waithe about a lot of things over the years. We became really good friends in a writer's group. And now I'm going to give you a very carefully written, on the lift right here, introduction to Lena Waithe. Being around Lena is being in the presence of authenticity. She's an actress, producer, but a writer first. She's an Emmy winner, style icon, LGBTQIA hero. Lena Waithe is a classic. It's probably why everyone in town wants to work with her, and it's probably why many of you are here today. So welcome, Lena Waithe. Hi.
Hi.
We are sleepy sounding.
No, it's great. It's wonderful. We were out last night.
We were.
Okay.
Hey, and I get
dancing.
To say why.
Oh, you can. We can now?
I officially can say why.
I'm so excited about this.
Okay, Lena was. Lena's going to be in my second feature, guys, which we just wrapped. A movie
Justin
called,
directed me.
That's right. A movie called Bad Hair.
It is.
And I have to say, Lena's hair in the movie is quite fabulous.
It's great. Right now, I don't have any.
But we gave you some, though.
You did.
Okay, let's get into The Wiz, because this is one
Jesus
of the things.
Christ.
Okay, there's two things that we have disagreed with.
This is what every lunch sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
Right
it's
now.
All, we talk about Michael Jackson, The Wiz. We talk
Whitney.
About the Jackson's Family, American Dream.
We always talk about Jackson 5, American Dream.
We talk about that miniseries.
We do. Angela is in our lives. Miss Bassett.
Of course, yes.
It's great.
Okay, wait. But for real, The Wiz and Star Trek The Next Generation are the two things that we chronically disagree about. And I want to settle it here and today.
I don't think it's going to be settled.
Well, I do.
Okay.
The Wiz. What you got against black people trying to live their dreams, Lena, in the city?
Because the truth is,
yes,
white people had more access,
wow.
And so they did this thing called The Wizard of Oz that I saw first.
Wow.
So it's like, you know that episode, the throwback episode in Atlanta where there was like the FUBU and then the fake
yes.
one? So I felt
you know
like
what?
The Wizard of Oz
Don't
had the
it.
Actual tag.
Don't
and
do
then
it.
When I saw The Wiz, I was
Don't
like,
do it.
Is this?
But you know what The Wizard of Oz did not have?
What's that?
It did not have
Michael.
Well, it didn't have
didn't
Michael
have
Jackson.
That, didn't
but it
have
didn't
that.
Have Diana Ross neither.
Well, and
walking
Diana's
around
lit.
In a blue nightgown.
Yes.
Giving you tears.
Tears
and emotion.
And a really well crafted afro.
Oh my God. The afro,
the afro
was
always
spectacular.
On point.
And they didn't even have like the green screen that we have today
no.
for that afro.
No.
Like it was like
that was real.
Perfect. It was like painted
somebody
on her.
Was there was that was a job.
Yeah. And see, that was.
Somebody's job.
Afro boy.
How is Diana's afro? How is it doing?
Yeah. So
what's it doing?
Judy, eat it, Judy Garland.
Well, yeah. But
and it's also where Michael and Quincy met.
I know.
And this is, we can't take this away. I mean, that's where we got Off the Wall. That's where we got Thriller. That's where we got Bad.
I'm grateful for that moment.
You gotta be.
I'm grateful for that.
I just found out recently that in order to make The Wiz, Michael and LaToya moved to New York for
this
a few years.
This is the conversation
years.
That was happening prior to the walk-up. This is always me. What?
This is literally all we... I'm sorry.
They
this is all we
together?
Talk about.
I know.
No, they live
you
together.
You have theories on Michael and I share theories about Whitney that nobody knows. That's all we do.
By the way, I was in a YouTube... I've been in a Michael Jackson 1987 YouTube hole for
Phenomenal.
A few weeks. For a few weeks.
I've been in like the 1991 era
wow,
of Whitney.
Wow, wow,
yeah.
wow, wow, wow. Because yeah. now we know
when
things
Bodyguard
that we
was
didn't
about to
know.
Happen and she didn't know what was going to go down.
And we didn't know at the time some of the things that we do know now.
Oh, we didn't do nothing.
We knew nothing, but now we yeah. see. Anyway, we hey, yeah. there's other people here too.
Hi guys, this is what happens when we're at one of our homes. We're like,
it's
so
true.
Anywho.
The Jacksons.
The Jacksons.
Circa 72.
Did you see The Life of Bobby Brown on BET?
I didn't see
you
it.
You didn't watch it?
No.
There's some
and not because,
some
not
inaccuracies,
for like, you know,
but whatever.
With some what?
Some inaccuracies.
Inaccuracies?
In my opinion, yeah.
About
because
who?
I'm a
about
Whitney
Houston
aficionado.
Oh, like
in
what?
In my opinion, yes.
Well, let's get into it. What did they get wrong? What did they mess up?
Here's
what do you
deal.
Have against BET?
I have nothing against BET. you guys will know on Monday why BET is writing checks to me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
wait, we're gonna know Monday. We don't know already.
No, we can't say yet.
Okay,
but Monday we'll all know.
There's first been question. Whispers, let me take
there's
that
whispers,
off.
Whispers, but okay. You know.
Let's do this.
Go ahead.
What are all of the things
yes.
that you can talk about?
I know.
That you, Lena Waithe, are working on right now. Let's get into that.
Okay, I can talk.
That
about...
That should take us through to the end of the podcast.
I can talk about Queen and Slim,
okay.
which I'm really excited about, which you've read an early
yes.
draft of.
Brilliant film. Who's directing it?
Melina Masukas is
yes.
directing it. My sister, my soul sister. And Daniel Kaluuya will be our
Woo!
Slim. Mm.
It's like
be
a
our
black
leading
Bonnie
man.
And Clyde situation.
It is, and we have to find our queen. Mm. That is our job.
I
so
love
it was
it.
Carmen Cuba's job. I'm glad it's not mine.
Yes, Carmen Cuba, casting director.
The phenomenal casting director,
she
Carmen
also
Cuba.
Casted my
Bad,
latest film,
yep, Bad Hair.
We had a great, great relationship.
She's phenomenal.
She is great. Okay, so Queen
Anyways,
of Slim.
So we're doing that. We're going to start filming that late January, mm-hmm. and it's like the first real movie. Like I've written features, but this one I had to mature as a writer to get to that place to write this movie.
What do you think you had to go through to get there?
Probably the first season of my show.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The Shy, like going through all the things that I went through in that and being a first-time show creator and being young and black and like trying to assert myself and people maybe sort of counting me out or thinking that I don't know what I'm doing. And
wow.
so I think in the midst of that,
can you
I just,
imagine someone counting Lena Waithe out?
It's like, not a smart thing to do.
It's foolhardy,
because
frankly.
They don't realize that I'm a child of God. So
blessed and anointed.
But yeah, like, so I was like going through that, but still, you know, being the Barack Obama that you got to be in the
yeah.
midst of those things. And so, but then when I would go home at night and work on the script, I turn into Malcolm X and just like
wow.
fold that into the work. And you've read it. I mean, it's very much like, I like to call it protest art, but it's
mm-hmm.
also, and the interesting thing is it is a heterosexual love story because
yeah.
someone pitched it to me, like the opening, and then I kind of took the opening and ran with it. But
You're
I kind of like the fact that, like,
that.
What, heterosexual love? Yeah, I
yeah.
am. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
heterosexual.
As am I.
Everything.
Yes.
But I like the fact that I can be a proud, masculine presenting gay black woman and then
mm-hmm.
write a movie about a man and a woman that happen to fall in love.
Well, you also happen to be like a writer, you know.
True. But I do think there is this thing that happens when you're a queer person of
yeah.
color, like everything you do like has to come through that lens.
Yeah.
And I think that it's cool and fine and great, but for me, I like to sort of keep people guessing. Like the fact that I have Queen and Slim and then like 20s, and we're shooting the pilot for 20s guys.
Y'all know about 20s?
Yeah, man.
Come on,
it's
get into
finally,
it.
Finally, first week of October. This Justin was supposed to do it, but he got a little busy. So another Justin is directing it. Justin Tipping, who is fantastic and stepped in, you know, because for a long time I was just like, you know, me and Justin thought we were going to be able to do it together, but obviously because Justin got busy, but I really found our groove and our thing, and I think it's going to be a beautiful pilot, and then hopefully we'll get a series order.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I'm going to be doing some acting, but I can't say what that is
mm-hmm.
yet, but also, too, there's a thing that has to do with Mary Tyler Moore that I kind of want to
Whoa!
Do. Yeah.
I actually because, didn't know that.
Yeah, like, I think it's like all we're working on it, but yeah,
she's,
I want to do a documentary about her and her
she's
impact
not like
on
your house
kind of
mother,
stuff.
But she's pretty close. Like,
she's
one of the...
She's in the house.
Yeah,
she's in the house.
She's like in the upper level
she's,
of the
yeah,
house,
Yeah, she's
too.
There.
Yeah.
Her portraits are there. It's
mm-hmm.
amazing.
Not
RIP,
the mother, but...
Not the queen mother. Queen
Whitney's
mother is
the mother,
Whitney.
Right?
Whitney
yeah,
is the mother.
Okay.
She birthed and
okay.
went through labor.
House of Houston.
House of Houston.
Obviously.
I know. We used to be Brown House, and now it's House of Houston.
Wow. Okay. I feel like your house was never Brown House. There's a shade. Hey, guys.
Okay.
So
anyway.
You're listening... You are listening to
Crawford House.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If you get that, you
I
know,
get
that was
it.
Okay.
Where's my tea?
Well, you can add
you
me.
Know,
I don't know.
Coffee.
Is there some tea in here? Because we get to sip
There's
that.
There's no tea, honey, but there's coffee in here.
Well, shit, this is a smoothie.
I want to sip that.
That my lovely assistant hooked that up.
Mm.
So, anywho, so yeah, we're working
tart.
On a bunch of stuff, man. Like, to me, it's about keeping people guessing and surprising them, I think, because you can get stuck in a space. It's like, I always say, I don't want to just be, I want to be more than one episode of television.
Yeah.
But also I want to be more than just the black girl in that Spielberg movie or that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. It's like,
I mean,
it's
that's
easy to put you in those places.
That's what's crazy to me is a lot of people learned about you through Master of None, where you played Denise.
Yep.
And also, which I think is probably my favorite character, like separate of it being you,
mm-hmm.
and wrote a huge episode with Aziz called mm-hmm. It was Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
and you won an Emmy for that.
Yeah.
Low key.
Yeah.
First black woman to ever win an Emmy
I know.
For comedy writing.
Crazy.
Is it your fault that this year's Emmys was a lot whiter?
I think so.
Okay.
Me mm-hmm. and Donald. Don't
it,
put.
It was
don't,
like a
about Donald.
Mostly you.
And
you
know? Riz.
It was like the backlash. I feel like Lena Waithe.
They're like, guys, there's too many black people
guys,
last year.
Guys, Miss Maisel, we gotta undo gotta what
have
we've done.
Jewish story told from the 1950s.
Shout out to Miss Maisel.
Shout
it
out
looks
to
fantastic.
Everyone at Amazon.
Okay, this businesswoman over
no,
here.
No, I mean also I'm with. We have a project at Amazon called Them, which is all about like the Thems of our society.
Oh, that actually sounds amazing. Them
we may
sounds
have to scoop
amazing.
You to come and like you know do some directing. Yeah,
I like
it's phenomenal.
Being scooped.
Okay, perfect.
Listen,
we'll just do the deal
away.
Right now. Come on, Justin.
I do have a Lionsgate, you know, partnership. So we'll
you
have
do.
To work it out.
I mean, I have a first look at Showtime. It's fine.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. Lena, remember when we were like super broke?
We had to eat at Five Guys all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, for a while it was had to, but then you kept eating there.
I know. And
I'd be like,
what's wrong with eating at
y'all,
Five Guys?
There are times when I made dinner for Lena.
And I'd be like, oh, no, you
like,
did.
Like,
yeah.
Legitimately, like,
I'd
like,
come over.
I'd made, like, I remember making like a meat sauce.
You
for
did.
Like hours.
Yeah.
Like it had a little bit of wine in it.
Yeah.
It had like, you know,
and I don't
real...
drink the devil's nectar.
Well, it was cooked though, and it had, you know, DPO tomatoes up in there.
Don't
and it was
those.
Like in the oven.
Not a fan of tomatoes.
It was a whole thing. And you came through with like a double hamburger with
yeah.
cheese and Cajun
probably
fries.
Bacon on there. Yeah.
And you ate it. Unapologetically, I might I add.
Always. And Apple TV would always be going.
Always going. Well, you know what? Jackson Family American Dream was always going.
Always
That's
on.
What we would watch.
And just like, you know, quote it and like say it back to the TV.
How many times do you think does Angela Bassett ask someone to go to bed in that movie?
About 18 times.
About 18 times.
Go
to
bed.
Joseph. Go to bed, Joseph.
Go to bed.
It's brilliant.
They're international stars. They've traveled all over the world.
All over the world. They have millions of fans.
Millions of dollars. Okay,
oh
what are you
God.
Doing?
It just like...
We're living in their house that they built. Okay?
It invigorated
The best part
me.
Was when LaToya was like, you didn't even know where they were.
Wow. That LaToya?
Woo! That, whoever that actress is, I was like, damn, that is a
Listen,
choice.
People forget. People sleep on that movie, uh-huh. okay? People sleep on them, but it got us through some dark times.
It did.
I remember, we talked about this recently, but like there were like very specific, was it Nia or was it you that put together the instructions to get through to the Vietnamese unemployment line?
That was Nia.
Nia, okay.
Who told us and we passed
because
it down.
Because we were unemployed.
Very.
And the checks,
some funds.
The checks were held up for reasons unknown.
Yeah, we struggled. You had your Echo.
Oh, I had the Toyota Echo.
Echo you did. I had the broke down Infiniti truck, but it's all good.
Girl. The amazing
the
thing
AC
about-
didn't work.
The amazing thing about that time for me that, because, uh-huh. you know, I wish people could know you that version of you mm. because you are and were at the time one of the most resilient people that I know. And I remember somebody asking me, what do you think Lena's secret is? This is recently. Somebody was asking me, like, how does she do all of these things? And I said, you know, I think part of it is that Lena can hold uncomfortable feelings at like and tolerate them for an amount of time and not let them distract her. Mm. You used to tell me that fear and faith can't exist at the same time and you choose faith. And I remember like you were broke, honey, but you would never stop paying for cable because that was your
This is
because
my
that
job.
Was your life. But that was your life.
Yeah,
that was
like
your job.
Canceling cable, like canceling my dream.
Yeah, it's true. And that cable bill stayed on.
And now it's like just ridiculous. Now, and like now I have channels that no one's even heard of.
Yeah, I don't even. Like, I like cable just because it's comforting. I don't know what's on it
I
anymore.
I never watch it.
But
I have it.
That sounds really
just in case.
Really wasteful, and it is.
I don't know. Like there may be a show on Epix that I have to tune
that
into.
You have to tune into immediately.
Yeah.
But I remember that time because we had this. I don't know if I should. I don't know if it's politically correct, but the show's called Don't At Me. But we'd call each other and say, "Hey, are you on watch?"
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know, it was hard.
It's the thing I think, but that is what I tell people about the most important thing you can have in this business is community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you have to bounce stuff off people, and you have to have someone to send a script to. You have to have someone, and I always felt like you have more talent than me. Like you have, there are things that you're good at that I'm not, and I think that I'm always. And there's things that you're good at that I'm not going to be good at.
Like, but you know vice what I'm saying? Versa, too.
Yeah, but I feel like that is a thing that I think is good and that I can watch you and admire things that you're doing and learn from you. And when I send you a script, you're going to tell me things about it that I would not be aware of on my own. Mm. And I think that a lot of people, it's good to have people where you are, but it's also good to have people that are like a little bit here so you can rise to the occasion. Because even like Donald, like, but I always tell Donald, I'm like, motherfucker, I look up to you, brother. Like, but that is like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think he's like, what we like in this, I'm like, no, but I always want to have people around that I can go, well, I have to rise to the occasion when I'm around. Because if you have too many people that are just on the same wave as you, you're going to keep doing the same shit.
Right. But the other thing, too, is, you know, it's the give and the take. That's what mm-hmm. Sidney Lumet mm-hmm. called it. Sidney Lumet, director of The Wiz.
Okay.
Sidney Lumet would say, you know, he really enjoyed people that he could give and take with. People who, you know, he could creatively disagree with and fight it out and figure it out with. And mm-hmm. I feel like I've been so blessed to have that friendship with you because likewise, I always send you my scripts as uh-huh. well for the same reason.
Yeah.
Like, I got to get the Lena Waithe notes.
You know? No, like it's like an important, random pitches. And
it's,
like,
it's an important part of the project.
Yeah,
like,
same here.
It is.
Same.
But what I want to know, was it just innate in you? Is it something that you had to learn? Like, when you would go and look at your bank account and go, well, that's not going to last
that's
for a
negative.
Week. That's a minus sign. Hmm. I'm starving. And yet you would still sit there and put in the time. Mm-hmm. And you would still crank out. I mean, I've read so many scripts of yours mm-hmm. that are fantastic. And they were just getting you ready for the things that people are starting to know about mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, the stuff that no one will ever see, right?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, we both kind of have little vaults. I feel like yours is bigger than mine. I feel like you're like probably the most prolific person that I know. You are constantly putting out material. And it's excellent. How do you do that? How do you compartmentalize? Because I struggle with that to this day.
Yeah, I mean, no, it is draining, mind you. Because I think you know that. But I think too, it's interesting. When the muse comes, I just try to, you know, sit with it.
Yeah.
And allow it to move through me. And the truth is like I always say that the scripts are of me, but they don't come from me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really do believe a higher power is using me and my body and this laptop to get stories out to the world that need
right.
to be told.
Right.
And also, too, it's just like whatever's wrestling in my spirit, whatever's in my head, I have to get it out.
Yeah.
So I just have to write it down and like figure it out. And like that's why I also write really fast because mm-hmm. I don't want to hold the stories captive in my body.
Right.
So I just like try to get them out as quickly as I can. And also there's this level of trusting myself. I've gotten to this point where it's funny because somebody was asking Alana, like, is it hard living with a writer? Because most writers are neurotic. And she was like,
and for the listeners,
oh, here
at
we
home,
go. Alana Aisha.
Who is Alana?
That is my fiance. Which, you know, I'm very lucky to call her that. She basically is like, well, Lena's not neurotic about it. She goes, babe, I'm going to go upstairs, writes a script, sends it out. And then it's like, okay, the production dates are. But the truth is like that I don't.
It is just like that. No, you don't make it, you know what? You don't make it complicated.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I'm learning to do that.
Mm.
But I think that really is the thing, is that a lot of people make it complicated.
That's interesting.
I can't write because I have to take this class, or I have to learn this first, or it's
or
just
it's not
hard,
ready,
or it's
not this.
It's not ready. And I had somebody send me an email.
I'm
first
excited.
Of all, don't guess people's emails and send them scripts, y'all. Don't do it.
Don't
okay?
Do it.
Like, it's not cute. It never is cute. I'm sorry.
We're not going to read them.
Yeah, some of y'all might be here. Okay.
Ah!
The carefully worded email, it was cute.
Okay.
But the fact that
send your script to the blacklist.
But, somebody asked me, you know, would I read their screenplay? And typically, I get these emails like when it's announced that I have a job.
Of course. Yeah, so, they're like,
like,
sir?
The least available I am is
right,
when I
right,
get
right.
some of these. But, someone sent me a script and said, hey, I really want your feedback on this. And mm-hmm. I thought politely wrote back, maybe a little shade. You know, hey, I'm busy.
Probably a shade.
And I read and write scripts for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's what I get paid to do. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, I don't have time to read yours for free.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to the blacklist.
That's
you
right.
Know,
yeah, that's
blacklist. $75, get professionals' eyes on it, da da da.
Yeah.
And then they said, but I don't think it's good enough.
Mm.
And I thought, well, if it wasn't good enough for the blacklist, why are you sending it? What do you think of me?
Right? They're like,
what must you think of me?
You're the first step. You're the first step of this journey.
But people make it complicated. And the truth is, you're never going to get better unless you do it.
No, yeah. And the thing is like, that's why I'm a big book. But also, too, I feel very blessed. I know you did, too. It's like, we went to school for it. We got to mm-hmm. take classes. And we got to learn the basics. And then we get to go color outside of the lines, which we've done in our careers.
But, you know, you don't go to school for tenacity.
No, that's true.
And you don't go to school for stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah.
But these are things that
or
you need.
Or also just, like, you know, just an unwillingness to give up. You mm-hmm. can't learn that, you know, or drive or this. And that's the thing. It's like, I can't put a fire in somebody's belly.
Right.
So it's like,
and that's
they gotta
what it
have
takes.
That. Yeah.
That's what you have to cultivate.
Oh yeah. And I still have one.
Yeah.
So what people don't realize when you starting and you like you got that fire, it's like I'm over here, you know, got a little few accomplishments, and I still got the fire.
Yeah.
So that's what you up against.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you got motherfuckers that ain't willing to let go of their throne.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You still trying to get in the palace.
Yeah.
So you really gotta be on your P's and Q's and on your shit. And like, mind you, I'm still learning. I'll watch movies and TV shows and go, ooh, that's good. Oh, okay, I see what they did there. Okay, I need to step my game up in that space.
Yeah.
Like, or reading scripts and like saying things and going, ooh, I love how they played on the page there and things like that. Because so many people I think are so eager to say they're a writer. They're so eager to say they're a director.
Yes, ma'am.
Say they're producing.
Yes, ma'am.
But they're not really doing what it takes to be good at that thing.
But you know what? I want to say this though. It's not always easy because, you know, writing really does involve facing the worst parts of yourself.
Oh, my God. It's you a therapy session with yourself.
And sometimes therapy is really uncomfortable.
Very.
And sometimes nothing is coming. Nothing is landing on the page. Or, you know, you're writing and it's some bullshit. Like, you know, that is the key, in my opinion, to writing.
And I think that's the difference between great writers and not great writers.
And the best news about that is that you can cultivate that. You can actually practice that.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, when the work is bad and you know it's bad and it's just coming out of you like...
bad.
Like you ate some, you know? The ability to just sit there in your own shit.
Right,
and
literally.
Keep writing.
Yeah, keep going.
That honestly, that however many hours you spend is like money in the bank. Like it just put it in your savings account. You don't get to spend it yet, but trust me, like that's the skill set.
But the truth is, the thing is, it's the hardest thing to teach someone,
which is
that your trauma is perfect fodder for your material.
Absolutely.
Because the truth is, and I think that is a gift that only a few people have, which is they can look at their self in the mirror and see all their flaws and blemishes and literally take each one and then put it on the page.
And
most people look at their flaws and blemishes and go, oh, yeah, those are my flaws and blemishes. And let me come up with this cool idea about this movie over here and write this thing. And so when I read that thing, like, I don't feel anything.
Yeah.
But when somebody takes their flaws and blemishes and puts them on the page and I read it, I go, huh, that touches me, even though that's not my experience. Because either way, trauma is trauma is trauma is trauma. So if you write about yours, then I'm going to be able to relate to it because I have my own.
Because humanity, sadly, I mean, the human experience is traumatic.
Yeah.
And when you read somebody's flaws on a page, it makes you go, oh, my God, there's a human being that I'm reading. This is a real person.
Yeah.
But not even just the flaws, just the, like, self-doubt. You know what I'm saying? You said this, and I think it's very accurate, is that getting your own TV show is like getting beat to death by your own dream.
Correct.
Because it doesn't matter if the work is not coming out good.
No.
That shit is due, okay?
Yeah.
If you don't turn it in, the show don't get made, and you lose your dream.
Here's
Bye.
The brilliant thing. If you put me, Justin, and Issa, and Donald all at this table, we'd all be complaining about our shows. Like, and all of our issues that we have. I think because people say, oh, that's my dream, I want that. And I'm like, but that's, to me, the true crux of this business is like the thing that you want when you get it, it's not what you thought it would be.
But,
and then it's about you then finding peace in that and still being good at it and still loving your craft until folding into yourself until you get the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. It's like when people say making it or getting there, it's like there or it is fucking hell.
There's no there.
Well,
that's why.
And then it's about you finding joy within that space.
And that's why you got to get good at writing bad.
Mm.
And you got to get good at it right now because it's still going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With a lot more pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot more money on the line.
And like, deadlines and all that kind of stuff.
Those days that you just don't want
to
write.
And while you're doing that, like, there's an exec that you can't stand that you got to be nice
stand.
To. And you got a writer on your show that, is not turning their stuff in on time.
There's
you got
politics on
a
top
line
of
producer
it.
That's, like, hiding the budget from you. I mean, it's just like there's another thing.
Yeah.
And then you come home and your partner's like, you ain't spend time with me. It's like, okay, well, you know, so...
I can relate to that as well.
Oh, well, my mind, honey, okay? Because I want to be like,
from
look,
TV, I've never experienced it.
No.
I've heard that that's...
The relationships are perfectly fine.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
Perfect. Everything's great.
Everything's great,
everything's
guys.
So great.
Oh, Jesus.
No, but like yeah. learning how to tolerate an awful situation yeah. and write anyway. If it starts bad, that's where it starts.
But and you can't complain because you're the person sitting at the head of the table.
You really
can. It's your show.
I mean, you can, but like can, it really won't get you too
but
much.
The shine is great about being a wave. I can't look at nobody else and say, what are we doing with Brandon this season? Right.
Oh, that's so sad. You have your own TV show.
Sorry,
oh my God.
Getting checks. You have an Emmy? So it's like, but you know, at the end of the day, it's like, but that's the business. That's the part of it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And so I think, but also too, what I try to teach people is like, because some folks don't know what bad writing is.
Yeah.
So they're writing badly and aren't aware of it. Mm-hmm. And they're sending it out and they're not getting the response they want.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, I look at it as like food. It's about making sure your palate is sophisticated. Mm. Because if all you take in is McDonald's, then when someone puts a filet mignon in front of you, it tastes weird.
Yeah.
So my goal is always to sort of give my mentees filet mignon as much as possible. And like, so that way they, then after a while, that's why I tell them, it's like, yeah, you can watch guilty pleasure shows, mm-hmm. but try to check out, you know, Handmaid's Tale. Try to watch Mad Men. Try to watch Mary Tyler Moore Show. Try to watch, you know, these shows that like will give you nourishment and you yeah. can kind of go, ooh, that's interesting. Like watch Moonlight a bunch of times. Go watch Network. Go watch All About Eve. Like, because my palate is so odd and weird. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the reason why it gives me this space to bob and weave and move in these rooms where I'll be talking about things that, you know, that people, references that people aren't even aware of. And I'm like, yeah, because that I do this. Like I go to school every day when I'm at my house.
But to be clear, we can still have McGriddles, right?
Oh, once in a blue moon.
I don't do the lunch menu, but
I'll do a fish fillet.
Whatever they
day,
put in that sausage, man, it's not.
That
it's
fillet probably, of fish be getting me.
It's probably like bad for my health and the climate in some way,
and the environment. Period.
They found a way to put syrup balls in the bread.
I know.
You know, it's like, how am I gonna resist that?
Gotta do it.
What's your like sort of like movie homework geeky thing? Like me at Filmstruck, I've become obsessed with
Filmstruck. I know, Lana loves that.
Freaking love it. What do you watch when you're at home? Like, what are you watching right now?
Oh, what I'm obsessed with, that Drew Michael comedy special on HBO that Gerard Carmichael directed.
Haven't seen it.
Everyone should watch it. It's phenomenal. I've seen it 3 times.
Okay.
I was like, we're literally not having a conversation that we would have had at a restaurant, but like, it is fucking phenomenal.
Why?
This motherfucker did a stand-up comedy special with no audience.
What?
It's like a stream of consciousness.
What?
And this, I've never even heard of this guy. I mean, he used to write on SNL. Like, he apparently has like a hearing loss that he had when he was a kid. And so like now his hearing is affected. And so he talks about having that disability and how people are like weird about that disability and like aren't kind about it.
I love disabilities.
Oh yeah, he has one. He talks about his emotional inability to be in a healthy relationship. But it's a stand-up comedy special. Make no mistake. Like,
is it hilarious?
That's the weird thing. It's like one point it's serious and then you're laughing and then it's serious again. There's like performance art happening. It's called Drew Michael. It's on HBO, and I think it's revolutionized.
That's my shit.
Stand-up comedy.
Are you watching Random Acts of Flyness?
Of course I am.
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding?
That show?
Because the fact that we've been knowing Terrence
for
the longest time, and congrats to him on Space Jam, you know, the reboot of Space Jam.
Oh, yeah,
Jam.
Yeah.
That's
congrats.
Phenomenal.
Congrats. Terrence, Ryan Coogler, producing.
This weekend. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That came out today.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah. And I spoke to Ryan about that project a while back, and I just remember thinking, like, you know, this... That's so great and so amazing. But I think it's going to be fantastic. But Random Acts of Flyness does this thing. It does this thing where it's like, oh, I didn't know we could do that, and I didn't know that that's how it could look or that's how it could feel. And Terrence is that cousin.
He's that guy.
Like, when he sees the line, he like rips it up and then runs the other way.
Yes, for the podcast listeners at home, I found a line on the table and I pointed to the other side of it. Envision it.
That motherfucker is brilliant.
He's brilliant.
Really brilliant.
The White Thoughts.
John Hamm.
Yeah, the White Thoughts with John Hamm skit, honestly.
Crazy. That's how you know John Hamm.
It changed me. It honestly did. It made me think about whiteness totally differently. And it branded whiteness in a way that I think white people would find repulsive. Which was the brilliance of that skit.
Here's the thing. Justin and I got a sneak peek of the pilot. That was the word because we saw it a little bit early. And so we were like out in the world. I was like, nobody knows what this is. So
They
don't know yet. So I was at this the Vanity Fair viewing party thing for the Oscars, whatever you call it.
Okay, I was at the Vanity. Who else was there?
So Hallie was there.
Okay.
So I see John. Yeah. So I was like, I have to go up to him.
So John and I.
I say, well, no, I go up to his ass. I'm like, John. I was like, okay, I want to say something crazy. He's like, okay. I was like, I saw a Random Acts of Blindness early. Thank you for that. You're amazing. You're a real one. I'm like, you're a fucking ally. He just like goes in. He's like, Terrence is genius. Oh, I felt lucky to be a part of it. And I was just like, yes. Yeah. So every time I see him, it's like the blackest fucking interaction ever.
Do you understand? Do you understand that when White Thoughts came on in my living room,
come on,
I paused it and left the house.
Oh my God.
I thought for a minute. I spoke to my ancestors.
Yes!
I walked back into the house and finished it.
Oh my gosh. There's so many things. Good. This is the fucking Renaissance. Like, you call it Terrence, Brian telling me about Space Jam.
But you know, but that is something that I love about us, is that we're not playing that crabs in the barrel bullshit.
This generation is putting an end to it.
We don't care for it.
Because we genuinely, like each other, care about each other. And I get
so much from having the tribe.
Oh my God. Like hanging out with Issa or Donald, and like, you know, I remember when Donald had like a little salon thing he did, like I think it was BET Weekend.
Getting Barry Jenkins notes on the script.
Oh, I know you, because he saw Moonlight, like early cut of Moonlight.
Yeah.
And I remember you called me and you were like, Lena, this is next level.
Yeah, you're not ready.
And I was like,
I'm still not ready. And I've seen it like four times.
I've been waiting because Barry, I've been on Barry since Medicine for Melancholy.
I know, same.
And I got to see Moonlight. I remember going. I was in New York. I happened to be in New York because we were filming Master.
Guys,
Nun.
Lena's really famous.
No, shut up. No, I was in New York and it was coming out, and it was the first night, and I was like, I gotta go. I gotta go do it. Yeah. And I went by myself. I was like, bye, Aziz. I gotta go do this thing. And so, and I went, bye, peace. And I went and he did the Q&A, and I could tell Barry saw me in the audience. It was like, Lena, are you, what are you doing here? I was like, man, I'm here supporting.
Man.
We're here. This is amazing.
That movie, you know, this is what it's about for me. Seeing like that story. A queer story of a black man who grows up in a world where being gay and being black and being a man are not things you can be at the same time.
Preach.
And seeing the scenes of him at the beach, you know, with his sort of high school or middle school weird, awkward,
it's like not
sort of love thing.
Yeah,
I never even dreamed, never even imagined that I would see aspects of myself that specific on the screen. Like, I never even wrote it down in a wish list. Like, it never occurred to me as a thing I would see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a profound experience because I leave the theater feeling more human. Mm. I feel more human after seeing Get Out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, same. And I feel more alive after seeing Get
more
Out.
More alive. And I think that's the power of what's happening right now, is that it's not just quote-unquote black stories.
No.
It's human stories with black skin.
Yes.
And people are realizing, oh, those are human beings as well.
Yeah.
And I get to go, oh, I'm a human being as well. These are not feelings that I have to sort of compartmentalize anymore.
Right.
You know, from the other parts of me.
Yeah, because I think when you don't see yourself, you start to feel invisible.
Yeah.
And I think that, but because to me, it's not enough just to have black people in the roles on TV, but they need to be flawed and layered and mixed up and trying to figure that out, because white people have that.
Yeah.
We still are struggling, I think, to have it. Because the funny thing is like, there's not a ton of black dramas. There's a handful.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those black dramas people consider to be guilty pleasures. Others are trying to be sort
like
of prestigious. Shut the fuck up. So, but the funny thing is, like, we have like comedies in spades. We got that galore.
Yeah, we got.
And
comedies.
Somebody was asking, I said, "Why is that?" I said, "Because it's easier for white people to laugh with us.
Oh no.
Rather than to sit with us.
It's true.
And to contemplate with us.
All white
and to
people.
Grieve
I'm
with
kidding.
Us.
No, not all white people.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because we still don't have a black Handmaid's Tale. We still don't have a black Game of Thrones.
I'm going to be honest, though.
Do you want one?
I don't need a Black Handmaid's Tale.
Black Handmaid's Tale is roots for white people. I agree with Michael Che.
Yeah, it's roots for white women specifically.
But
I'm here for it, by the way.
Handmaid's Tale is brilliant.
Gobbled it up from beginning to end.
But the truth is, it's like we say that about Atlanta. We can look at Atlanta and go, yes, that's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
But look, I'm waiting for us to have that as an hour. I don't even think The Chi fits into that necessarily. The Chi is still, look, I think we're trying, you know, but The Chi is very much like some black people shit in Chicago.
Okay.
Which is what I wanted to write.
Speak on it.
You know what I'm saying? bag, and I think we're getting that point across.
Great.
I'm just trying to show Black people existing in the South Side of Chicago.
As you know what I'm saying? And that's enough.
And we're, you know, trying to make it more authentic and more as artful as we can. But yeah. That's like me growing into that. And then 20s hopefully will be something else. But that's what I'm excited about that, because there has never, like, just us making this pilot is revolutionary, because there's never been a show where the protagonist was a queer woman of color.
No.
And
there never should be one, Lena.
Fuck that.
I'm trying to get into an argument.
We're going to do it. Too bad.
So you were talking about still being hungry.
Mm-hmm.
With everything that you have going on, what is it that you still want to do?
Oh, man. I think I want to be in a position where I have a body of work that I can do anything.
Mm.
And I ain't there yet, but I will be.
Anything you want to do.
Anything I want to do. And there's some things that I want to happen that are outside of me, but the fact that we have had a Black president of the United States but still have not had a president of a major studio
sure.
in Hollywood
yeah.
is kind of telling. Because at the end of the day,
that's what,
almost even more powerful.
Because that's what parity would actually look like. And that's what people, you know, when you go like, well, you were in a Black renaissance. Isn't it so exciting? Yeah, it's exciting, but we're not anywhere near parity. Parity would look like ownership.
Oh, yeah.
There would be
a lot of white people made a lot of money off of Black Panther.
Yeah. There'd be several
Ryan made some money, but a lot of white folks made a lot of money.
A lot of white folks made some money. There'd be, you know, Tyler Perry's got his facility out in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Ava has a Ray. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there'd be like a Black Universal, Blue Universal, I'd like it to be called.
You know,
Blairamount.
Blocus?
Blocks. Blocus Bleachers.
Blyan's Gate.
Blyan's Gate. I want Blyan's Gate.
Come on. We're going to make a movie about Black people.
But that's what parody would look like is if, you know, Black folks, queer folks, Latinos, Asian folks, like
we're
owned.
Green lighting positions.
We were in green lighting positions.
We still go in to try to. Because that's the thing. We got to go in and pitch our Black, queer, whatever stories to white, straight people.
Yes. Which means that our stories are almost always gradiented, indexed against whiteness.
Uh-huh.
And I'll own the fact that, like, in Dear White People, you know, part of the appeal is seeing Black people speak in this hyper-articulate way.
Frasier.
They're dressed really well. Mm-hmm. They're at this Ivy League school. There's an air of whiteness about the characters that make it appealing to bigger audiences or to white folks or even to Black folks who have aspirations to be there.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we kind of sneak in a bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm going to say, it's also like the Blackish on television, too.
But we still have to be somewhat subversive, I find.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have to, it's not really the market. It's not what the market demands, because the truth is, we all know that the market can be told what it likes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We tell the market what it wants.
So, but we are really at the whim of what a very small group of white people believe about the market.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's always pumped through that lens, you know, and I think the more powerful you get, the less they can really say.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the real color that matters in this town is green.
Is green.
So if you're successful, they're like, they want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, another thing I've learned that another color people like is gold. Because the fact that, you know, when you get that Emmy, then all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, let me get to the,
they do
let me
like
get
gold,
close
honey.
To the magic.
They do.
You know, so.
I went with Lena to a Janelle Monáe concert, y'all. Lena is famous as hell. Okay,
that low key is my demo. If I'm going anywhere.
It was.
I didn't realize. I was like, this is gonna be interesting.
It was like a Fellini movie. Like everyone was like, who's that? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that?
Oh,
it's
please.
Me.
We were also like, no. Because we were also in a boot. We were like a box.
It was wild.
Yeah,
with Laverne Cox and Donald Glover.
And Donald Glover.
But I'm looking around, honey, and everybody was looking at you. And like everywhere we went, there were people who were like, oh no. Like that you didn't
Justin
see because they didn't dare speak to you.
Shut the fuck up.
That's how famous you are,
shut
bitch.
Shut up, man.
It was fantastic.
I will. It was a lovely date that we were on. It was amazing.
It was
people
very
are looking
special.
At you too. They're like, oh, that's the dude that did Dear White
nah,
People.
No, one person like, oh, hey.
No.
Can I talk to Lena? Like, that was some of that.
No.
Do you know Lena?
No, the most brilliant. Well, first of all, that was an amazing night. It was great.
It was.
Speaking of Renaissance, that was a Renaissance moment. Because like
was.
We were like in this box, like Laverne was getting her entire life.
Entire life.
And Donald is there in pajamas.
In pajamas, contemplating blackness and existentialism.
Oh, he's always asking deep questions.
Loved it.
And you're like, Donald, I don't have
the
brain capacity right now to answer that.
We will explore them, I hope, in season three.
Figure it out later, yes. But like I said, we're dancing. I'm looking at Janelle. Janelle's like, to me, like on a whole nother level right now. She's killing it.
Giving everything.
Everything. And
Laverne is
taking it. Donald is in it. Like, and I'm just like in it. Yeah. And I was like, this is what the Renaissance looks like.
Yeah.
You know, this is what like it must have felt like, you know, when Baldwin and Zora and Lorraine were hanging out.
But what it really looked like to me, though, is we got to go backstage.
Oh, Jesus. We did.
When I say we, I mean I, because I just kept walking briskly behind Lena. And with a brisk pace.
Yes, and, I'm like, come on, let's go. Get it. Come on, keep up.
My favorite moment was backstage, and like a minute, like 30 seconds went by.
Oh, God.
And you grasp Janelle's hand.
I did.
And you say, I want to give a word to you.
Yes.
I'd like to pour into you for a second.
That's
and
right.
I giggled.
Yeah.
Because I was like, Lena, come on, what?
No.
But then you did. And within a minute or so, we were all in tears.
Yeah.
And that one-on-one connection, and she's so human and so cool and so down to earth, mm-hmm. and being able to have that conversation that we had
mm-hmm.
about how important it is to tell these stories and yeah. to get our lives out there,
yeah.
to me, that's what makes it special, because I don't really care about being famous
right.
or being whatever,
yeah.
like... being what, you know, someone told me successful looked like. I, like you, I just want to find a way to tell stories that I want to tell
yeah.
and have the agency to do that, you know, without having to, like, you know, run myself into the ground.
Right, yeah.
That, to me, is, like, the goal. And I think that that's so special because I think it's our humanity that we're getting to show. You know,
mm-hmm.
we get to stand on the shoulders of...
all the people that
other filmmakers and
yeah.
people who frankly had to be really loud or really broad
right.
or really whatever commercial whatever we get to stand on their shoulders and
yeah.
go okay so many people are taking advantage of it
yeah and we're all like the same age you know what I'm saying so
yeah.
we all were influenced by a lot of the same things we were watching mm-hmm. a lot of the same stuff we were listening to a lot of the same things
yeah.
so how we interpret that into our art and it's like and then we try to make something new and something fresh because we want to make people feel how those things that we saw made us feel.
Correct.
That really is the goal, is to make something that won't just be good now, but it'll be good 20 years from now. I think that ultimately is always sort of what I'm thinking. Like, is this timeless or is this just something I'm writing right now for shits and giggles?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Which I think everyone would be cool with some shits and giggles, Lena.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
Fair enough.
Okay. Are you still having fun, real talk?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How do you keep it fun?
Working with people that I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very particular now about who I'm hiring and who's around me because I have to protect my soul
yeah.
and my spirit in this space. Because I can't create and be free if I'm not in a happy space. And so that is a bit. And also, I'm very blessed in that because I'm in a certain position. Now I can kind of say, like, no. It's either this person or nothing. And now they're like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about that is I get to give people opportunities that otherwise wouldn't get them.
Yep.
So I can say, yeah, that black guy over there, I think, is ready for this. That black woman over there is ready to direct this thing. Like, in fact, that our friend is going to direct a pilot of a
mm-hmm.
show that
mm-hmm.
I'm EPing is
phenomenal.
Huge. And she's ready for it, too. You know?
Absolutely. And I feel like, you know, we've gotten to do that with our casting as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, people talk a lot about dear white people and mm-hmm. the shy. And I was like, well, what's your secret of casting? I'm like, I'm giving people... who are clearly talented and have deserved the shot
yeah.
forever. A shot.
Yeah.
It's not like rocket science.
No.
You know, it's like there's a lot of black people on the bench, okay,
yeah.
who are fucking ready to
oh,
go
yeah.
into the game.
Yeah, and there's also like a part of our, you know, I think our job is to be able to see talent.
Mm-hmm.
Is to be able to look at someone and go, okay, they going, they getting there. Or somebody saying like, okay, you still got more work to do. You need to be working, but I'm going to keep an eye on you and we'll circle back.
Right.
Because that to me is always the thing. Because I would never want to put somebody in the ring when they ain't ready to fight.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to get your ass kicked.
Yes.
And you're going to want to go back in
and
again.
That's not going to do anything for
no.
you.
No.
Yeah.
But so many people think they're ready to get in the ring. You know, they're so eager to be in the ring because
mm-hmm.
that spotlight looks cool and all these people, all these spectators are watching.
But you forget you got to take a punch
yeah.
every now and again.
And my thing is, I'm like, and you're going to get hit.
Yes.
But what I'm trying to do is teach you how to block as best I can.
Yeah.
And also when you do swing that you maybe land a punch.
Well, listen.
These are sports analogies you don't understand, but it's fine.
I've heard of sports.
Mm-hmm.
You're
like, Lance, a sports thing happening today? Like,
yeah,
it's NBA Finals. What the fuck?
Right. There's like hoops
Why are you calling
involved.
Me? What? Who?
And balls.
Should I root for Houston?
Listen. Always root for Houston.
Yes.
People from the internet have things that they want to know,
uh-uh,
Lena.
Uh-huh.
And they've been asking me.
Oh,
okay?
Jesus Christ.
And I would like to ask you.
Okay.
So, this is from Fictionalize.
Okay.
That's very clever. Fictionalize.
Yeah.
Or Fictionalize. They want to know, what does Lena's exact actual writing process look like?
Oh, my God.
Like if a camera was on.
Honestly,
what is it?
You know what? It's not that complicated. Because what happens is, like, I get an idea. That's where it always starts. Like, mm-hmm. an idea, a thing. You know what? I'll use Queen of Slim, for example, because that, someone pitched me an opening.
Mm.
That's all I had to go off of.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from there. But basically, James Frey was like, there's a black man, black woman. They're on a first date. It's not going that great. Not going that horribly either. They leave the date. He's giving her a ride home. They get pulled over. The cop gets very aggressive. They end up killing him with his own gun in self-defense. And they decide to get in the car and go. And I took that and I said, okay, well, who is this man and woman?
Make everyone white. Have it star Judy Garland.
No, shut up.
A tornado touches in Kansas.
Shut up. I'm going to give you the real answer.
No, I'm listening.
So then we always sort of start with character work. So I was like, who is she? Who is he? So I was like, he should be Martin Luther King. She should be Malcolm X. Mm. And by the end of the movie, they should swap places.
Yes!
So
that's how you write a script, guys. Come on.
So that was really my.
That's a story I want to see.
That's
Sorry,
really
I keep
my first.
You, tell me.
That's my first thing, and then I was like, okay. And I always start with what they do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was about like, okay, the things that I grapple with is like, do we try to bend the world or do we just try to exist? There's validity to both. But for her, she's this attorney, this defense attorney who I was sort of inspired by, Bryan Stevenson, who wrote this amazing book called Just Mercy, who basically dedicates his life to getting mostly young black and brown people off of death row. So I sort of gave that to her. And so on the night of this date, her client had been executed and she didn't want to be alone. And so she sort of already, her emotions are kind of running high. And he, I wanted to make him sort of an everyman. So he works like a Costco type place where his father is a manager.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of who these two people are. And they get in this car, they get pulled over. And the pullover scene sort of really has a lot of things happening, and she's sort of bubbling, and there's all things happening. And anyway, they kill him in self-defense, and they leave. And then the idea I had was, oh, what if the cop they killed had been acquitted of killing an unarmed black man,
mm-hmm.
obviously unbeknownst to them. So now people think that it's a revenge killing, that they're vigilantes. And so they become sort of unwitting icons to the black community. And so now they're sort of on the sort of underground railroad, Thelma and Louise type of thing. So they run.
And they have no idea.
They don't know. Well, they find out later.
Mm-hmm.
And then he thinks that she knew that. You know, and she's like, no, I didn't know that. And so ultimately they sort of get to know each other while being in this very heightened situation. And then you have to see what happens in the end. But that's sort of really this thing that I wanted to, and that's why I started there. And then I sort of beat it out. I always do very simple beats. It's like,
mm-hmm.
okay, we have the date. Well, I want to start with the date, just sort of like getting a bit of a battle of wits, and you get a sense of who she is and who he is. And then they get the pullover scene, and then they get in the car and they go, and then they stop, and then they go to this place, and then she says, okay, I've got an uncle who lives here, and then they go there. Da, da, da. So it literally was just like me on a dry erase boards writing out what the beats were, not getting super detailed, but just
mm-hmm.
like one sentence, like what is the beat, what is the beat, what is the beat. So those are my guidelines, and I try to make sure I hit those beats, but the other beats in between I can kind of play, and there's the fun and games and all this kind of stuff. So that's what I really do, is I just write the beats out, and then I sit down and use the beats as my map. But it's a loose map because I don't like being like constricted. Some people write these very detailed outlines. It's totally fine. I get that's their thing. I need to just have like a sentence, because if I have a sentence that says we open on a first date, then boom, I'm going.
You can write that
I'm
first
gonna
date.
Go. I'm gonna write that first date, and that first date can be whatever I want it to be. And then it's like they get pulled, and then they're on the car for a beat. And so she sees he's got a playlist, and she looks at it, and they're goofing around. He doesn't have great sense of direction, so he's on his phone. He's using Waze, and then they're sort of going back and forth. And then as they kind of have a chill moment and start to laugh, whoop whoop.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden the movie shifts.
Well, don't give the children all the
goods. Don't give all the tea, but I'm just saying,
not
like that
tea.
That is like, how can you find a moment of comfort and then fear, a moment of comfort and then fear, and the moment of comfort and then fear,
mm-hmm.
and then it's about them sort of just finding ways and scenes and moments for them to find out things about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really exciting. But that's really what I do. I just like write beats. I did that with The Chi. I did it with every, like, I still have beats from the pilot of The Chi that are actually in the fucking pilot of the
yeah.
show. So that's, I just do beats and then I go from there.
Well, that just to synthesize, first of all, thank you for that. That was brilliant. But to synthesize, you know, the most, the things that I heard was you figure out what it is.
Yeah.
What it is.
Yeah.
It's a journey where Malcolm X, Martin Luther King essentially go on a very long first date and they trade places.
Yep.
That's a story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. So many people don't do that step.
Yeah.
Some people don't do that step until after the third or fourth draft and they can't figure out why it's not working.
Yeah.
But that's where you start. What is the story? What's the thing that makes this
worth
watching? And
the thing that we do too, which is what does a character want? Mm-hmm. You know, what do they really want? And you have to always go with emotional and surface. And I always say an emotion, a surface one is I want to be famous. The emotional one is I want to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
So your character has to have both.
All right, so there you go, fictionalize. That. That's how you do it. Okay, the next question is from someone named Kelly Rowland. Haven't heard of her.
Are you joking?
No, I'm serious.
Oh,
she was like the second person to ask a question.
Because Kelly's a...
she's a homie. I love Kelly. Anyway, she wants to know what your favorite movie of all time, !
I should have got her about that last night. of all time?
Of all times.
Kelly, you're bogus for that, because that's a very hard question.
It is. I love that.
Here's the truth, and I always give, I can't always do one. I have to do multiple. Sorry, Kelly. Question?
That was a Destiny's Child callback. Good for you.
Come on.
Good for you.
Do the Right Thing is quintessential, you know. But yeah, I just feel like it's such a beautiful stream of consciousness, and it's literally watching an artist's like soul and spirit explode onto a movie. That's basically what that is, and I think that's why it's had such an impact. Eve's Bayou was really a big one for me. Just because I was the same age as Eve when I saw that movie.
Yep.
And it was really the moment of seeing myself and it being so eloquent and beautiful and about a world that I wasn't very familiar with, but me sort of being caught up in that amazing magic of New Orleans and voodoo and black women and all the things that go with that and the poeticness of the movie. And then I think, you know what? I'll throw in one that does really, I keep coming back to, which is All About Eve. Just a story about Hollywood, a story about aging in Hollywood, and about the next generation always being at your heels and not being afraid of that.
It's a movie that, like, I feel like nobody knows how to write anymore.
I don't know how to write that movie.
Because we don't come up in a studio system anymore, and you just don't have that much practice.
No.
Like, it takes so much practice to write something like that.
Every line, every word is intentional.
It's perfect.
Every glance. I mean, just the way Betty lifts up a cigarette, the moment in the kitchen, you know, like, and there's so many pros in it. Like, there's so many things. Like, you can watch it 18 times and still discover
Find something new. Yeah.
And I think that is the true testament of something phenomenal.
Can you imagine if there were black people in those roles, like, back in the day where we would be right now?
That's the tough thing. But the thing is, I think we're both like sort of like film nerds. But the thing is, when we look at those movies, it reminds us of the time in which that was.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And that black people couldn't exist in those spaces.
You know, I was watching on Filmstruck before. I'm going to have one more question from the internet. Mm-hmm. But I was watching on Filmstruck. There's like a thing called Cartoon Roots on it right now, which is like the cartoons that led to Mickey Mouse and Looney Tunes and all that stuff. But the very first one, it's like 1907. It was like a sensation. It was the first time that people saw real animation on film mixed with live action. It was a whole, like, it was a huge, huge thing. It's the first thing, a part of this collection, the beginning of animation and film. And the first thing you see is a person paint the word coon.
What?
And then make a, like, ape-looking black person out of the word coon.
What?
And then they draw the word Cohen, and they make this horrible Jewish figure out of that.
Whoa.
That's where we began.
Wow.
That's what people don't get.
We also
began
with Birth of a Nation. I mean,
oh yeah. Birth of a Nation is more known, you know, famously racist, huge transformational film. But the roots of any American entertainment form, particularly film, is so linked
Gone with
to
the wind, like all
minstrelsy
these
and slavery. And like, we just got to start being humans, like, in the last decade.
That's real.
You know, like, we've been having to be servants and then pimps and best friends. Like, it's taken a really long time to get to a place where a movie like Moonlight can even open in theaters, from a distributor.
And sometimes we minstrelize, we do this like minstrel show thing to ourselves.
Yeah. Lena, how do you enjoy being the voice of all black people?
Wow. That's the issue. It's like, it's the thing is, it's like everybody has a different experience with their blackness. Every single black person has a unique experience with their blackness, and has a unique experience in this world. So I think it's unfair to put that on any black person. You know, I think the reason why you have the Tyler Perry, Spike Lee conversation is because there's this element of like, it goes back to, Booker T. Washington, W.B. Du Bois. You know what I'm saying? Or Malcolm X and Martin, there's a constant debate of who should we be in the world? How should we present? And there's always that thing of we should be rebels and rage against the machine. And there's others that should say we should be docile and blend into the background. Like, there is no right or wrong answer. I just think for me, I'm going to write the shy the way I write the shy because I feel like that's a thing that I see. And that's what I want to portray because there's this element of like looking down on a group of people because they aren't of a certain ilk or don't come from a certain place. But that doesn't mean I have anything against, upperly mobile black people. It's also like, to me, it's like I love Menace to Society and Boys in the Hood, but I love Menace to Society a little bit more because they killed the protagonist in the end. You know what I'm saying? It's like all the shit that Kane was doing in that movie caught up to him. And Boys in the Hood, Trey got out the car. Trey had a father. Trey had somebody like looking out for him. You know, Trey's girlfriend was a virgin. Like there's this thing about that movie that's sort of like still wrapped up in this idea that black folks can be good. Men of Society said like, but no, we also have the right to be bad. Mm-hmm. We have the right to be villains. We've earned that. So I always sort of live somewhere in between. Like I'm not, and I think that there's also this weird thing too when I'm writing and I'm doing a thing, I'm like, ooh, is that okay? But then I gotta like get rid of that because I can't have somebody be, you know, on that. It's interesting because like, for example, I'll talk about this and maybe, I don't know if you gotta cut it. Well, I don't give a shit, whatever, I'll be real.
Yes.
So for
don't
Queen
at her.
For Queen and Slim, you know, and I'm not alone in this. For Queen, I think we'd like the character to be American-born, brown skin, and a fresh-faced chick with preferably natural hair. That's a beautiful vision, in my opinion. So there's a lot of agents that don't have clients that look like that, right? So we have to put in the breakdown. We got to like play and make sure there's things we're trying to like get clear of what we're looking for. Now, mind you, everybody can read. It's all good. But there's a thing that I tend to do in my action lines without saying a thing, but I'm alluding to it, where I may say, if she were a slave, she would have worked in the fields.
Okay.
So you know what that means, right? So there was someone that saw that on a breakdown and was like, well, that's offensive. And I was like, I don't think so, because my ancestors would have worked in the fields. I am not light enough. I would not have been in the house. Nor would my attitude would have allowed me to be.
No, it would not have.
So I don't find that offensive.
Right.
You know? Because that's where my ancestors would have been. You know, we are not of the lighter ilk, so to speak, right? But also, no, I'm not like brown. No one would consider me dark-skinned. I'm like, I think I'm sort of in the middle.
How I like my coffee.
Perfect.
Just a little cream.
Little bit.
You know?
Little bit.
Some Splenda, maybe.
But I say that to say is that somebody could be offended by that. I'm not. That's how I'm choosing to articulate what I'm looking for in a person. But people may say, and that's valid. A person may be offended by it. It's totally valid. And we have a little dialogue about it. But I say that to say is that I don't want to be the voice of all black people. I'm the voice of this black person. And if other black people appreciate that, then wonderful. If not, cool. Don't at me.
And it's, yes. KCRW, that's the trailer.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we know that. Final question from the internet. Yep. Nola.Nicole.
Come on, Nola.
Wants to know, which living single character do you most identify with?
I feel like everyone knows the answer to that question.
Maxine?
You know what? I'll go half.
Who
I'll
I
do Maxine
with.
and Khadijah, and I'm dating Regine apparently or something.
Yes, dating Regine.
I'm going to date Regine.
I'm here for that.
Regine.
I'm for sure Maxine.
Just, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a hint of Kyle.
You know what? That is shade that I will not receive on Kyle's behalf.
Ah, come on, CC.
I'll take it. Thank you, Lena Way.
Thank you, Justin Simeon.
Mm. And thank you all. Yeah, you just listened to the first Don't At Me Live featuring Lena Waithe.
Yeah, I hope it was good for you.
I would like to thank producers Gina Delvac and Carrie Hart.
Thank y'all.
Clap for them.
Yeah.
And it's Kara Hart, okay? I messed up the first time. It's Gina Delvac
Justin,
and Kara Hart. I would also like to thank KCRW, head of programming Gary Scott.
I'd like to thank them as well.
He has fantastic hair. Clap for him. Special thanks to Vishnu Vallabhaneni, who's my assistant,
Vishnu.
And y'all. Yes. Cheers
Vishnu
for Vishnu.
Is amazing.
Aisha Lomax and everybody at Film Independent, the LA Film Festival, and ArcLight Culver City. Our theme song is done by the fabulous Chris Bowers. Get into it. You can find me at jsim07, every on all the things. Where can they find you, Lena?
You can find, you put in Lena Waithe, it'll all pop up.
It'll all pop up. Lena's famous, guys. For real, rate,
shut up. Lena's famous,
rate, review, and subscribe. We really, really love and need your support. I'm Justin Simeon, and we'll be back in the studio next week with another episode of Don't At Me from the one and only KCRW.
Yeah.
Hey guys, it's Cheyenne Davis. You may know me from MTV's Teen Mom OG or Think Loud Crew podcast. I'm here with my dad, Papa Floyd, to tell you about our new podcast, Unfiltered Kitchen.
The kitchen is the hub of the household for many of us. The one-stop shop for conversations both big and small. Cheyenne and I have been having open conversations about all aspects of life in our kitchen since well before she was able to see over the counter.
And now we're inviting you into our own kitchen as a part of the family.
Unfiltered Kitchen is a two-way street. I share my advice on cocktails, cooking, parenting, and the lessons I've learned.
And I inform my dad what it's like to raise kids today, how generational barriers affect us, and the joys of being a daughter. Well, your daughter.
Get ready for a whole lot of unfiltered advice. You can take it or leave it, but you're never going to leave this table feeling hungry for more.
Listen to Unfiltered Kitchen wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you follow automotive news? Or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host slash two of my top five friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.